We invite you to enter the domain of self-awareness and the pursuit of knowledge. Keep striving and welcome to the Knowledge Heist Podcast.
What's up, guys? Welcome back to the Knowledge Heist Podcast. A very special guest today. I can't wait to share his story, his background. And, you know, it's really interesting. This is very hits home for me because I'm really passionate about the whole internet thing and how people connect. And my guest today is from Florida, like on the East Coast. So it's kind of it just goes to show the power of the internet and how we connect. So that being said, I hope you guys enjoy the show. I hope you guys have been enjoying the rest of the shows. Go check out that new segment, Soul Talks. And let's dive into this one, man. I'm going to let you introduce yourself. Welcome to the show, man.
Hey, what's up, Lewis? Thanks for having me. I'm Rob Wheeler, a.k.a. Coach Rob, out here in beautiful Coconut Creek, Florida, Fort Lauderdale area. And it's a pleasure to be here today with you.
Awesome, man. I appreciate that. I appreciate your time, and I appreciate you being on the show, man. So let's start off with who you are, what you do currently, man.
So currently, I am a strength and conditioning coach. I own a 1,600 square foot small private facility called Strength Camp Coconut Creek. Out there, I run strength and conditioning training for just about anybody. Also train some professional fighters, athletes, stuff like that, college athletes, people that want to up their level as far as athletic performance and strength and conditioning.
Definitely. So I like that. So you kind of have a variety of things and what you offer over at your gym, right?
That's correct.
Awesome, man. And what was the inspiration behind that, or how'd you start that? Was that a goal of yours always to open up a gym?
I've always had a entrepreneur mindset. As growing up, my father owned his own business for 35 years.
Yeah.
So I was always around my father. He was a very hardworking man, kind of guy. Go to work at 6 a.m. Don't come home till 9 p.m. So just seeing that mentality, but mainly my story for gym ownership is a little bit different. I was a Navy veteran for 10 years. After I got out of the Navy, because I had knee problems. So I went to Operation Iraqi Freedom. I didn't see combat, but when we got back, I was supposed to go straight back out again to see combat. They gave me what's called they gave me a physical. Basically, whenever you have to go to combat, you have to be physically fit, physically in shape. And they found out that my knees were like all jacked up from all the time I spent in the military. I was a military police officer. So like all the times fighting other military members and doing domestics and all the police law enforcement stuff, I tore my knees apart. And they said, guess what? Your knees are shot. So I did physical therapy, orthoscopic surgery, more physical therapy, cortisone shots in the knee, and I just couldn't do it anymore. And they said, okay, you're done. So that actually led to me having major depression, major weight gain. I blew up to almost 300 pounds.
Oh, wow.
And I didn't have like really any will to do anything. So I had to find a new passion or a new love for life, something else to do. So,
of course.
And that's where fitness kind of came in. Fitness saved my life. So,
okay. No, definitely, bro. And I appreciate you opening up that foundation for us, because I really want to dive into everything you just said right now, because I think it you just kind of put in a nutshell who you are and why you do what you do right now and why you offer your services to people and what your goal is, right?
Exactly.
So, yeah, man, let's start from the beginning. So how old were you when you first went to the Navy? And was it kind of one of those things where, you know what, let's try it out? Or was it, there's background to it? Was there family members in the Army?
So, once again, my father, probably the biggest influence of my life. He did 3 years in the Navy right before Vietnam. So he didn't have to really see Nam, where his duty station was located at. He was actually stationed out in California at the time and worked on aircraft and stuff. But background, I was a college athlete. I had a cross-country track and basketball scholarship.
Okay.
And I blew it. I didn't care about academics. I didn't care about showing up to practice. I had no kind of, once again, no motivation growing up. I was kind of a knucklehead.
Mm-hmm.
didn't really have any guidance or anything. And so after I lost my scholarship and I got kicked out of college, every day, religiously for 6 months, my father knocked on my door at 6 a.m. and said, go join the Navy. I kid you not. To the point where my being kind of stubborn and being an idiot was like, okay, yeah, F you, Dad, I'll go join the Navy. Let's see how you like it. And I did. I went and joined the Navy. In 1997, I was 21 years old.
Mm-hmm.
Went to boot camp, went to my first command. In my first command, I didn't know nothing about fitness still at the time. I was probably, I don't know, 120-pound weakling. You just get bullied. You just get picked on.
Wow.
Had a pretty much, like, fight every day of my life for the first year because back then I was on a ship, and the ship didn't have, like, there was no women, there was no mix, nothing. It was just a bunch of dudes on this tiny ship all trying to be top dog and throw all that manliness around. Yeah, so it was nuts. So I remember at 21 years old, here I am, a grown-ass man, calling my dad from a payphone and saying, Dad, crying, I want to come home. I can't do this. I want to quit. And the one thing that will always stick with me probably till the day I die is my dad said, I love you, son, but you can't come home. And he hung up the phone on me.
Wow.
And something, I don't know what it was from, like, right then and there. Something just clicked. Something just, like, switched on. And that's mm-hmm. where everything changed from weightlifting to standing up for myself to like really truly learning what it is to be a man and be an adult. So I was a 21 year old child for a yeah. while. So it took that wake up call.
That's very interesting, man. That call, like you said, kind of changed your perspective and your form of thinking. Cause you were, like you said, on a ship, you call your dad and all he had to say was, I love you, son, but you can't come home. Hung up the phone, like left you stranded, you know, hypothetically.
That tough love, so to speak, he wanted me, at the end of the day, he wanted me, like, he's like, dude, you're 21, you got to figure this out.
Okay. Would you say that's kind of like the start of, like, your whole, at least your perspective change at that moment of your life? Because
I think that's the start of me becoming inevitably who I am, like this, you know, guy, no holds bar, live your life, be a man, take care of your responsibilities. I became very responsible at that point.
Great, dude. I like that. So that's amazing, man. And I'm happy that you were able to share that, because that's a state of vulnerability right there, where, you know, you were crying on the phone with your dad.
Oh, I was bawling like a little man. I was, oh man. I just remember I thought my life was done. I wanted to come home to the safety of my bedroom and, you know, play video games and do like immature stuff that kids do. I had, my immaturity was low, man. And it just, it took that wake up call, that, like I said, that tough love, you know?
Yeah, definitely, man. Now, yeah. Talk about then you were there for 10 years, right? Talk about the whole 10 years, bro. And in, you know, the process, what you kind of face, the mental toughness, what, you know, the experience, what did you see and how did you deal with it?
So it was like being in the military, and I would say this for any branch, it's hard to adapt. It's, you know, it's a lifestyle change that I don't think anybody's really ready for, even if you grew up kind of in that situation, because you kind of get thrown into the fire, so to speak. So there's, you know, different ways the military works. But for me, because I went to the recruiter and I didn't get any form of training, I didn't ask for any kind of job or anything. Yeah. I was just thrown into the shit, so to speak. So, like, my first year was cleaning toilets, painting a ship. It was all pretty much like what they call bitch work. I mean, I had no, I just was made to do what I was told, you know, working parties, humps, you know, food on the ship, and just really rough kind of, I wouldn't wish that on anybody, going out to sea a lot, doing, you know, the cool part, seeing different ports, seeing different things, seeing things you've never seen before.
Yeah.
The bad part, being out to sea for, you know, multiple months at a time, with friends or family. So after that, the ship that I was on, it was decommissioned because it was old. So what they do in the Navy with destroyers and certain ships, if it gets to a point of being so old, they just either like put it in a museum, or they actually like take it out and blow it up and turn it into a coral reef.
Yeah.
So that's what they did with my ship. They turned into a coral reef. So at that time, because I already did my year of being what they called undesignated, I got to pick a job. So the first job I picked was called a CB. A CB's motto is called We Build, We Fight. CB stands for Construction Battalion. So okay. Basically what a CB's role, I would put it as the equivalent of like being a Marine or being a soldier in the Army, but just for the Navy. You go to hostile territory.
Okay.
You start setting up like the base for the other people to come in, and you have to hold that base. You have to hold that stronghold in combat. So that was like another struggle journey in itself. We did like field exercises, being out in the field for long periods of time.
Yeah.
Learning how to fight in foxholes. We went to Egypt and we were stationed on like an actual dump. Like it was a dump site and we had to like set up camp there and stuff. So just rough conditions, not really anything fun. You know, you had an M16 you had to carry, you had to do ruck marches. Just another level of military. I would say being a CB was even tougher than being a seaman or being undesignated, just a normal guy on the ship, because now you had responsibility. You had to learn about chemical warfare attacks. You had to learn, you know, how to properly shoot a gun, how to properly maintain weapons, and being a little more physically tough. But then after that, I actually got out early. So I broke what they call broke service, because at that time, if you were going to enlist in college, you could get out 1 year early.
Okay. So
my mental attitude back then was still kind of bad. And I was like, you know, screw this. I don't like the military. I'm getting out.
Mm-hmm.
So I got out. I tried to go back to school. That didn't work. Mm-hmm. September 11th happened. And I actually got a letter in the mail that said, you have two choices. You can go back in, or we're going to bring you back in. So either voluntarily or what we call voluntold.
Wow.
So at that point, with September 11th and everything else, I went back in and I went back to the recruiter and they said, well, the Navy has this new law enforcement program. You can do that. And I was like, let's go. And from there on out, the rest of my time in the military was as a police officer. So,
okay. So that's kind of your whole 10 years in a nutshell, what you saw, what you actually did, and then how it kind of, you got out, you went back in, and then your position from there, right?
Yeah, pretty much. I went to, when I became a cop, I went to Japan for 3 years.
Okay.
That was an amazing experience. But while I was in Japan, the base was huge. We were the local authority. So
okay.
If you think of, you know, LAPD or any local police department, we were the police officers. So I dealt with a lot. Dealt with domestic violence, child abuse, rape cases, investigations, traffic accidents, deaths, you know, everything that a normal cop would deal with stateside, we dealt with in Japan on our little, you know, our base, our community. So that's where I got a huge, huge, huge portion of my experience as a police officer. And then when you go to Iraq, being a police officer is a little more different. It's more what, you know, they call personal protection or physical security, more military soldier mindset type of stuff. So
yeah, awesome, man. No, that's great, dude. It sounds like you saw a lot and it taught you a lot as well. And you know, going through those motions, you know, you put, like you said, I like the word you mentioned earlier, the adaptability. It's kind of hard to adapt, right? And then you know, a lot happened in those 10 years. Now, in hindsight, man, do you still carry some of those traits, those like experiences with you, in the sense of how you or the person you are today, like responsibilities, adaptability, things like that? Do you exhibit that?
I may not had a great time in the military.
Yeah.
But the military made me who I am. They gave me that, I guess, internal mechanism that keeps me going, that keeps me fighting, that even with you know, like working out or anything, something just clicks on and it's almost like you become a different person. Mm-hmm. And you're able to push through a lot more. It's definitely, the military is definitely good for one thing. Yeah, they put you through hell and they give you some, you know, emotional and mental problems, but they also give you the ability to fight and the ability to have this like mental toughness like no other. So
of course, definitely, man. I bet. So that's some good stuff, man. I appreciate you explaining that. Now you mentioned that okay, after that you were the police officer, and then your knees were shot. So were you let go, or they gave you the option like, okay, you know what, you can't continue?
Yeah, so basically, depending on like military and medical, they have a great way of like kind of avoiding problems.
Uh-huh.
So while I was in the military for 3 years, I was like, look, I have bad knees, and every time I went to the doctor, like, no, you're fine, suck it up. So interesting enough, what happened is, like I said, we got back from Iraq. I was with what's called a helicopter squadron. So I was the military police officer attached to that squadron, and my commanding officer, my captain, called me in. And he's like, you know, I have some bad news. We had someone become IAID. So IAID stand for internal augment, meaning that when the war happened, because they needed so many bodies, they would just take so many from each command or from each company to send out there. So they said, you're the cop, you have the experience, you're going. And I remember telling the captain, I'm like, look, you know, I'll gladly go, but you know, my knees are jacked up. And he's like, yeah, whatever. We're going to send you to the flight surgeon to get checked out. And that the minute I saw a flight surgeon, he's like, man, your knees are jacked up, you can't go anywhere. And so that kind of disqualified me from going back to combat, which led to the therapy and everything to getting out. So I was medically discharged out of the military after 10 years. So,
okay. So that was exactly what happened then. So you were, like you said, you were discharged medically. So then you're back to your normal life. We'll call it a normal life, right? In this case, you're back, you know, you're out of the military. What's the process behind that? Going from the military in 10 years, now back to, you know, what now? So, your knees are shot.
So that's where the depression and weight gain came in. Cause you know, here I did 10 years, I had 10 more to go and I could have retired. So, you know, I'm already angry and frustrated. I can't retire. They gave me a nice little severance package, but you're like, you know, when the money runs out, what do I do?
Yeah.
So looking for jobs, you know, having a mortgage, I was already married with kids. So the responsibility of taking care of my family on top of it. It was a lot at the time. And all I did is I remember going to Planet Fitness because at the time that's what I could afford. Okay. And I was like, you know what? I'm just going to rehab myself. I'm going to rebuild myself, and I'm going to do what I have to do to be successful. I mean, you know, I was looking for jobs and applying for jobs and going on interviews and all that stuff, but I had a lot of downtime.
Yeah.
So I was like, you know what? I might as well go to the gym. And that's what I did. You know, I went to the gym probably Monday through Friday or Monday through Saturday for about an hour, and mainly did a lot of treadmill work to start losing weight first, trying to change up my diet a little bit, then started doing some more weight training. And do I still have problems with my knees? Sure. But, you know, it's not as bad. I mean, I still squat a lot, deadlift a lot. I still work my butt off a lot, where before I couldn't do that. You know, being overweight, being out of shape, being depressed, I had to find something else. Mm-hmm. And so during that time, I found a job as a Department of Defense police officer for the Marine Corps out here in Florida. But once again, that wasn't good enough. So Department of Defense police, well, not all police, some police have, you know, fitness standards.
Yeah.
And part of the Department of Defense police, they had fitness and body weight standards. Fitness standards, I would crush it. As far as the department, I was like in the top as far as my coworkers, the scores and stuff. You had to do a mile and a half run, a 75-yard sprint, a 500-yard dummy drag, and like push-ups and sit-ups.
Okay.
And I would crush it, no problem. But my weight, I was always off of body weight for, I'd say, 3 to 5% whenever they weighed us in.
Okay.
And unfortunately, they had a rule. They said, and this is crazy, especially being a disabled veteran, if you fail any portion of the physical fitness test, whether it's the body fat or the actual fitness test,
yeah,
even if you've done 19 years and you have 1 year to retire, they can fire you.
Wow.
I remember I was doing a 14-hour shift, and what's funny, interesting enough, and I don't tell anybody really about this, I had, because the first time I failed, and I was like, I'm not going to fail again, okay. I had liposuction. I went and got liposuction to keep my job. Mm-hmm. It was that important for me to have a job that I went and went under the knife and
yeah.
like at the end result, at least that would keep me within standards. And it didn't. I still ate like crap. I still gained the weight back. So that was like $8,000 down the toilet.
Holy cow.
And I just, that was part of the mental and the depression. I wasn't happy.
Yeah.
With myself. I wasn't happy with where I was at. The job was kind of like a hostile work environment. It wasn't really a great place to work. But I remember I failed the test again after doing like 14 hours overtime. My chief of police calls me and he's like, you know, we're going to have to let you go.
Wow.
I'm like, man, you know, so what am I going to do now? And there was other stuff there that we don't have time to get into, but
yeah.
The reason why they were going to let me go wasn't even because of the weight loss. It was just because the chief of police was a jerk. And
oh, so it didn't even come down to the requirements.
Now, there's a whole other story there for another time where,
yeah, of course,
I met with the EEO rep and the base commander, and they made the chief of police kind of look stupid because I was in the right and he was in the wrong, and he kind of went after me after that. So, but it all started from the weight.
Yeah, of course.
Thing. Okay. So after that, I was like, I gotta get out of here. I went to the West Palm Beach Veterans Affairs Hospital as a police officer there. Figured okay. as a veteran, as a cop, I could do good on both ends. And I just recently left there in March to run the gym full time. As I was there for 6 years. I saw a lot of veterans on drugs, a lot of veterans trying to kill themselves, went to court cases for veterans, a lot of that level of being a police officer for me was even rougher than being a police officer in the streets, because here I am, not only am I a veteran and I'm mm-hmm. supposed to empathize with my fellow brother and sister veterans, but I have a legal obligation to, you know, take you to jail if you do stuff you're not supposed to.
Yeah.
Put my hands on you if you want to fight, or protect the nursing staff or protect the doctor. And so We had an active shooter. I had built the gym. I was like, I can't do this anymore. It's just too much. So I built the gym or started the gym. We had an active shooter. And then unfortunately in March, my mom passed. And in March, I'm like, yeah,
I'm really sorry to hear about that, man. Sorry to hear about that.
That's all right. She's at least she's at peace. So,
yeah.
But after she passed, I was like, yeah, I can't do this, because with that job, if you wanted to take time off, you had to have time on the books. You know, mm-hmm. if you were sick, you had to have sick time. If your kids were having issues, you had to have sick time. It wasn't like you could just say, hey, you know,
boss. My mom passed away. Yeah, yeah.
So they didn't even give me bereavement. I had to use my personal time to take bereavement. So at that point I was like, I want to make my own rules. I don't want to be under, you know, anybody else tell me when I can be sick, when I can take a vacation, you know, when I can go to a funeral, when I can do this, when I can do that. And I was like, I'm out, I'm done. So
definitely, man. Wow, man. There's a lot of stuff we could tackle and kind of unfold more, because you just explained a lot from, you know, the start of your depression, going overweight, going under the knife, gaining the weight back, losing your mom, the fact that, you know, you're dealing in a weird position because you're a veteran trying to protect your veteran sisters and brothers, like you mentioned. But at the same time, your duty is to also protect the general public, and you have to put your hands on them, or you have the legal responsibility, like you said, to arrest them, right? So that's some crazy stuff, man. I appreciate you guys. Appreciate you opening up about that. What I want to ask you now is kind of going back to the depression and then leading you up to the liposuction. And you mentioned you had a family. How did that affect your family? And then how did you find that inner will to, like, you know what, man? I don't want to say snap out of it, but what kept you going, or what kind of put you in check with yourself, man? And how did you?
I don't think I ever snapped out of it. I mean, as most veterans will tell you, I still have. I mean, I have depression. I have anxiety. I have PTSD. I have some very dark days. The difference is, I'm not afraid to get help. I go to counseling. Okay. So I go see a counselor. And I know that if I have a dark day or a dark week or even a dark month, it's okay. What's not okay is, you know, staying in that darkness, you know, finding something to get you out. And that comes with fellow veterans that, you know, support system, friends that deal with the same issue. My fiance, the depression, it led to my divorce. I was married for 18 years. I have three kids and, you know, I'm divorced because of some of my mental issues that I had. So, when I met my fiance, now when I got with her, like everything was on the line. It was, you know, full transparency. Yeah. Hey, this is me. This is what I go through. This is what's going on. And the difference is where I don't feel my ex really had, and she was a veteran too, which was funny, where I didn't feel like I had her support. My fiance is like, she's willing to go to counseling. She's willing to talk to the doctor for me. She's willing to try to find, key things to keep me from like having an anger issue or blowing up or, you know, showing the depression. So it's all about your support system and, the people you surround yourself, just like in business, it's who you network. It's who you surround yourself with. You want to be around like-minded individuals. You know, you don't want to be with someone that's going to put you down because that's not going to make you feel better. You want to be with the people that understand what you go through and they're going to build you up regardless that, you know, I have a few friends and I know that if it's like 3 a.m. and I felt like, say, I wanted to take my life or I was just that bad, I could call them and they would pick up and say, dude, you know, what's going on? Are you okay? Yeah. So, once again, the military is very, very good. I mean, there's no wars going on, so it's probably not that bad now. But when you're in combat or when you have a lot of stuff going on in the military, it's very good about making you mentally tough. But also, it's like a give and take. You know, they'll make you mentally tough, but it will give you a lot of emotional and mental problems depending on, you know, what you deal with and what you go through. So,
of course. Definitely, man. Now that's amazing. Because how did you deal? Because I have a question that kind of came to mind right now. You said that your ex was a veteran as well, but she wasn't really understanding, which is kind of funny, right? And then your fiance now, who is willing to, you know, be on your side and go talk to the counselors, be, you know, making sure you're aligned, getting back to track on track, right? Now, how can I say this? Because there's some people who will automatically say, you know what, this is me, I'm fully transparent, however I don't expect you to understand, so therefore I don't want you to feel obligated to be next to me. Like, how did you kind of release that ego where you accepted the help from her? Does that make sense what I'm asking?
I think when it comes, yeah, it does. I think when it comes to, for me, for my like my mental issues, I don't have an ego. I want to be better, you know. If I kind of feel like if you have an ego and something's wrong and you're saying nothing's wrong, you don't honestly want the help. You don't want to be better. You want to live in that space. You know, you like the pain, you like the frustration, you like the attention you get when you're mentally on. I want to be happy. And, you know, we have one life to live. I want to enjoy life. I don't want to wake up and be miserable like I am sometimes. So, you know, I'm going to do whatever it takes, whether it's reading or meditation or prayer or see a counselor or working out. So like for me, it's working out. And that's why I'm in the fitness space, because I know that if I go a week, and let's say in that week, one day, just one day, I don't work out and I have a bad day, I can get depressed immediately. I can go very dark immediately. But if I work out 90% of the time or 90% of the day, whatever's coming at me, I can handle. And it's just something for me with letting it all out during the workout, pushing as hard as I can during the workout. You know, we do some very, very, very tough workouts at strength camp, and I put my members through the ringer, but I'm right there with them. You know, usually at 9 a.m. when I have my 9 a.m. class, I'm not just sitting there coaching them. I'm working out with them and I'm pushing with them so they can see that. Just like this, Soldier Rush, you know, I lead the pack and, you know, motivate and run back and pick up my members so we all finish together and like, you know, come on, guys, we got to do this. This is what we've been training for, kind of level of motivation, because I try to be accountable not only for myself, but for everybody else. I mean,
definitely. So
that's why I think in the mental health space for people that like, oh, I don't want your sympathy. And it's not like I don't want sympathy, but if you know I'm having a bad day and you want to talk about it, let's talk about it. Maybe you know something that's going to help me out. Maybe you're going to say something to me that's going to bring me out of that funk. I mean, my business partners weren't in the military, but my boy Gus, who does my boxing program, and he's kind of like my right-hand man, mm-hmm. He had depression, and we play off of that. He's like, dude, I'm not having a bad day. We talk about the point of it is we have to get to a society of not just men, but women too, but mainly men. That macho bullshit,
yeah,
that's just got to go out the window. It's got to go out the window. You have to be able to find like-minded men and be able to talk to them. And if you cry, screw it, you cry. It's not a big deal. It doesn't make you less of a man.
Exactly.
Mental health takes,
I agree,
so much huge percentage of population, not just in veterans. And the problem is most of the time people, and mainly dudes, are like, ah, fuck it, I'm okay. And then they don't get fixed. And then what happens? My case, I was busy yelling at my ex all the time, and you know, we were fighting all the time, and then my kids are hearing this, and then now my kids are building unhealthy habits.
Yeah.
And the, you know, I had to break the cycle. There was a point in there where I had to break the cycle. So
definitely. Wow, man. No, I totally agree about that, especially the whole macho thing and the ability to cultivate a vulnerability that will, you know, in the long run benefit everyone, especially yourself, to become a better person. And I appreciate that. I appreciate that message. Now, I want to go back to like the process, what you actually felt. So that the liposuction process, right? You did the process, you did the surgery, but then you gained the weight back, man. What was your body feeling? What were you thinking at the moment? And what kept you going, bro? What actually made you like, you know what? I don't want to live like this. And I know the life I want. What was that process, bro?
I think it was, you know, I mean, I kind of hate the saying everything happens for a reason. And I hate it because it's true. You know, regardless if you, you know, you believe in a higher power or not, or karma or the universe, or, you know, positive thinking, everything happens for a reason. I just, that place I was at, there was just so much negativity there from other officers, from the people you worked with. It just like drained you. It just mentally sucked the life out of you. And, you know, every day going to work was just like a huge struggle, a huge battle. You know, you always wanted to call out. You always wanted to find a reason not to have to show up. But, you know, at the end of the day, you did because, you know, you need a paycheck. You got to pay your bills, right?
Yeah.
So I don't know. You know, after I got the liposuction, and it wasn't, what's funny is like, it wasn't nothing where I was morbidly obese or I was like extremely overweight. I was just doing it to try to maintain the job.
Uh-huh.
So I think the frustration came was when, you know, I'm still pushing myself physically.
Yeah.
I may not know much about nutrition or diet at the time, so I wasn't really eating healthy, but I'm still working out and I'm still running and, you know, running a couple miles here and there. And at work, we were able to go to the base gym occasionally and work out. And mm-hmm. where other guys didn't take advantage of that, I would drop off my weapon, go to the gym for an hour, you know, and feel good. I think it was more just the mental and negativity that just like put the weight gain on. Like,
I see.
I felt like I was, when I was there, for me internally, I've always felt like I've had a bigger purpose, always. Uh-huh. And I can't really explain why or what it is, but it's just there. It's something deep, deep, deep within my soul that, you know, I want to impact as many lives as possible. I want to make as much money as possible. I'm very cognizant of time. And awesome. And it's a blessing and a curse because I'm very cognizant of our life. I'm very cognizant of my family around me, how much time we have. You know, what can we do to live a purposeful and impactful life in the amount of time that we have? So I think mainly it was more mental, negativity. And it was just, you know, when I got to my next police station or police department, the atmosphere was a little better. And for a while, you know, I was gung-ho G.I. Joe, and I was getting bonuses for being a great officer and all that stuff. But then, once again, mentally, after a while, it just started wearing on you. And at that point, when I started transitioning to fitness, you know, I saw a bunch of, and don't get me wrong, at the Veterans Affairs Hospital, being a cop there, it's not like being a cop out in the street. It's not as tedious. You know, you do have downtime. You do have slow periods. But just seeing, like, I saw a bunch of police officers sitting around just being fat and lazy and, like, you know, eating out all night and always ordering fast food. And I'm just like, man, you know, if I'm going to be around this,
yeah,
I'm going to follow in that habit, you know, because it's always a team. They take care of you. So it's like they buy a pizza and be like, hey, Rob, come get some pizza. And, and my mental willpower at that time was shit. Yes. You know, I was like, oh, hell yeah, free pizza. You know, I'm down. And
yeah,
I just saw them like kind of like falling apart, you know, like getting fatter, having more problems, having diabetes, having, you know, mental health issues, you know, screw this place, I hate this place.
Yeah.
And what was crazy, if you were someone at that place in the police department and you wanted to escape and you wanted to better yourself, you had no support. It's like they wanted to take to keep you down because they were miserable. So they figured you might as well be miserable. I had very
good
friends when I started the gym that actually came to me and said, man, I wish you the best of luck. I hope you make $1 million. I hope you're successful. It was always like, oh, that's not going to work. And you're going to come back here. And, you know, so just getting out of that mentality, man, it's just
your environment, right?
Right. You have to set your environment with the people that think like you, that want to be like you. You know what I'm saying?
And it's true, man, because just like you mentioned, like, it's not something you snap out of because you still deal with it on a day-to-day basis. But it's that ability and power to say, you know what, I'm having a bad day, but I'm not going to let it define me. So you're around people who, like, your support system who say, okay, we understand. Let's find different ways to kind of get back on track, right?
Like I'll give you, for instance, a couple weeks ago, I was really having a bad day. We deal a lot with member issues and payment issues. And, you know, running a business, obviously, it's not easy. And I was having like, I was just really in a funk. And luckily, my coach came in there at 9 o'clock and he picked up on it. He's like, dude, you're right. I'm like, nah, man. He's like, bounce. I'll cover the classes. So I got to go home and kind of like get some quiet time and kind of reorganize, realign myself. And he took over, man. And there was no problems, no issues. I'm not getting a phone call. I don't know what to do, or, you know, so that's the support system. You know, when I feel like, cause I've only been in business a year and I'm not taking a huge income from the gym right now. When I feel like the gym's falling apart, my partners are right there like, nah, it's not falling apart, man. We just got to grind harder. Let's get it. Mm-hmm. And that mentality, that's what's going to keep this thing afloat. That's what's going to keep it growing. Having the support system, I mean, hell, you know, running a gym and having 14 of my members pay for a race out of their own pocket, you know, and run with me or run with us as a team.
Yeah.
That's that camaraderie that you can't get, you know, unless you're doing something right or unless you're motivating others. Because, yeah, I could be a trainer and I could be a coach and be one of those guys that, yeah, come in my gym, do this, get out. And not get to know you, not get to know your kids, not get to talk to you, not really build a relationship with you. But that's the difference. You know, I try to foster relationships with all my members and all my people, because not only the longer that they're there, it benefits me, you know, monetarily, but it benefits them as well. And we're building, you know, long lasting relationships that are going to last, you know, years to come. So
definitely. That's very true, man. Yeah, it's true, dude. And correct me if I'm wrong, man. I feel like you cultivate an environment over at the gym. It's not just about fitness, but about your mental health, mental toughness. Do you show that to your you know, we'll call them clients, I guess, your people that come into the gym? Are you teaching them, aside from the fitness, how it could apply to your daily life and your mental toughness?
Oh, definitely. You know, once again, sometimes being a gym owner, depending on who you're seeing, it's almost like being a therapist as well.
Yeah.
Because they'll start getting into, you know, marital problems or, you know, problems with their kids or whatever. You know, here I am, I'm a father, two of my kids are grown now, my daughter's going to be 20, my older son's 18, I have a 7-year-old, so I have that relatability as a father,
yeah,
ability as a police officer, I have the reliability as being a veteran. I mean, I have so much in my toolbox to help people.
Yeah.
it does go beyond. And even if you were like ever at a Saturday class, you'll hear me. Like, I push people and, you know, they're grunting and crying and they want to quit. And I tell them, I'm like, no, you know, keep going. This is what builds mental toughness. So we build mental toughness through the fitness program.
Through the fitness, definitely. You know?
And I tell them all the time, I'm like, look, push through this, because guess what? When you have a serious situation, you're not going to freak out. You're going to be able to handle it because you're going to be mentally sound and mentally strong.
Yeah.
So there's a little more there's a little more intuitiveness into my gym and my programming besides, hey, just show up and work out.
Of course. Yeah, definitely. You're cultivating a new environment, a new system.
Right.
Which is great, man. So, yeah, man, I appreciate, once again, bro, I appreciate your time. And before we end, man, is there like a message you want to say? Any last words for the people that are going to watch this and hear this?
I guess, as cliche as it sounds, regardless you're a veteran or anybody dealing with mental health, just don't give up. Get help if you need help. There's nothing wrong with getting help. It doesn't make you a weaker person. It doesn't make you a weaker man or woman. It will make you a better person. Get the help you need. Surround yourself with like-minded people and just keep fighting. At the end of the day, you know, the Rocky, I love the Rocky speech where he's, you know, talking about it's not all sunshine and rainbows. And,
exactly.
You know, that it's okay to have bad days. It's okay. Everybody has bad days. If there's someone out there that doesn't have a bad day, they're lying.
Yeah.
You know, let's face it, you know. Don't, and anybody else, just mainly, we got to remember that we can't let social media dictate how we feel.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, a lot of times these people are posting these happy pictures on Instagram. Look at my Ferrari. Look at this. Look at that.
Yeah.
You don't know what's going on in their life. So, you know, live your life, keep fighting, and get help if you need it. And that's about it, I guess.
I appreciate that, Coach Rob. And I appreciate your time. I follow you. I love what you're doing over at the gym. I see your videos. I see the post and your purpose over there. So once again, dude, I'm glad we connected. I want to have you back on the show, man, because I feel like we could talk about different stuff and just unfold more of the stuff you explained here today. So there you have it, man. And another successful heist. I appreciate Coach Rob being here. And I can't wait to share this one with the people and get the message that a lot of messages behind what he was saying. So that being said, keep at it. And if you do have, if you're dealing with mental illness or developing a mental illness, reach out for help. Let go of, you know, the ego. Break through it. You know, it's possible. Ask for help and, you know, cultivate the life that you want and keep striving. Thank you.